This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of In Focus, heard weekends on KTBB 97.5 FM and KRWR, the Team 92.1 FM. You can join us each week as we interview those who help Tyler and Longview residents make their lives better. As always, you can reach out with your thoughts on the show or any topic you would like us to consider airing at ktbb.com/infocus. My guest today, Laura Ferguson with Hospice of East Texas. She's the medical director. Their website, their URL, if you want to reach out to them, is hospiceofeasttexas.org. Laura, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and for meeting to talk with me about the Hospice of East Texas and all the programs that we offer.
So tell our audience about hospice.
Okay, sure. So the Hospice of East Texas has been serving East Texas communities for over 45 years. Our services cover 28 counties in East Texas. And so we do cover both the Tyler and Longview areas and extend beyond those counties as well. Depending on where you're located depends on the team that supports you. So the way the Hospice of East Texas works is that we are an organization focused on caring for those with incurable conditions that are terminal. The qualification is that two physicians have to decide that you have an incurable condition. And typically that's going to be your primary doctor or your specialty doctor. If you have heart disease, it's going to be your cardiologist. If you have lung disease, it's going to be your pulmonologist. But two physicians would say, I believe that if your disease got worse, it could take your life in the next 6 months. Now, the truth is, though, as we all know, we're all just doctors, right? And so we don't know how long someone has, but we do know when a condition is advanced. And we also hopefully know our patients and our families when they start to need more support. And that's really what hospice is all about. Hospice is one of the only forms of healthcare that comes as a team package. So in that package of care comes a doctor, such as myself or my partners, that help to manage your care or can work with your primary doctors to help manage your care. So you can keep your primary doctor, but let's say the hospice is coming out to your home to see you and you have a need that you can't wait till they get out of clinic to get a call back from them. And so when your hospice nurse were to come to your home, they can call your hospice doctor to help get things taken care of until your doctor's available to have some input in that as well. So there's physicians. There are nursing and nursing visits. There are aides. The aides, I've been a caregiver before for my grandmother, and the aides are huge in the care that's provided in the home. They typically can come out up to 5 days a week to help with baths and in-home care. Hospice provides social workers that help with all the way from paperwork and the obstacles of Medicare, Medicaid, insurances, and those things to just in-home support. As a caregiver, you need that person that has walked with other people through a process that you've never been through before many times and have helped support you emotionally, socially, psychologically, all of those kind of things. So you have a social worker as well. The hospice will provide equipment, any equipment that you need that makes it easier to provide for your loved one. So a hospital bed, a shower chair, a bedside commode, walkers, wheelchairs, a walker with a seat, whatever it is. You don't have to qualify for those things like you have to do on home health. You just get those services. Oxygen, if that's what you need to help care for your loved one. And that includes briefs. Those things are incredibly expensive too if you're a caregiver and paying for those things out of pocket. So equipment, also medications, all the medicines that are related to the reason that you're on hospice are provided from the hospice itself. And so I've actually had patients that not on hospice services were struggling to pay for all their heart medicines, but on hospice services that actually came on service and have done better for a little while because hospice is actually, they're able to get all their heart medicines because hospice is paying for all their heart medicines. And so medications, equipment, all these visits from these specialties, chaplains, volunteers. If you're a caregiver, a volunteer is a huge because if they come every Thursday from 1 to 3 and you get to know them and you feel comfortable, if you're a caregiver, you may say, I'm going to go get groceries from 1 to 3 on Thursdays. I'm going to go get my hair done from 1 to 3 on Thursdays. There are some of those things that allows some flexibility for a caregiver to get out. It's hard to ask for help, right? When you're the one at home struggling with advanced disease or advanced health conditions, and many times these are older populations, and their loved one, or they may even be younger, but their wife or their husband may also be sick too, right? And it's hard for them to take care of each other. And so these resources come in, but you do have to have a prognosis of 6 months or less in order to take advantage of the hospice services.
Well, when did hospice start becoming more of the norm?
So although hospice care has been around for a long time, I would say it wasn't till honestly around 2000 or after that, that we started to see more and more hospices. And honestly, I started doing hospice and palliative medicine. So I'm board certified and specialty trained in hospice and palliative care. And I moved into this community 16 years ago. And actually, I was the only person board certified and specialty trained in all of East Texas. And so hospice wasn't that popular back then. And when I started in East Texas, there weren't that many hospices. Now there are 30 to 40 different hospices that are around the community. And so you're seeing it become more and more popular and more acceptable. I think, too, though, people are living longer because of medicine. And so they are living longer with more issues and conditions and those kind of things, needing more support. I think, too, that unfortunately, there's a change in the health system that the old model of a family practice doc, right, that followed you into the hospital and they told you, hey, there's nothing more we can do, and you trusted them and they knew you. Those things don't happen much anymore. You go in the hospital, you get a hospitalist, you don't know them very well. They don't know you very well. A hospitalist, which is an internal medicine.
Educate me. Okay.
It's an internal medicine doctor that has a specialty in managing people that are acutely ill in the hospital, but they don't work outpatient clinics. And so your outpatient clinic docs don't come in the hospital anymore. And so as people are getting more and more ill and they're having more and more conditions, also the people that are there to talk to them about, you're in the hospital this time, we don't know that there's much more we can do, it's time to consider hospice, is someone you don't know, right? And I think that, and doesn't know your family and hasn't known you for the last 30 years. And that's hard too, because it's a conversation that you're having without that doctor that's known you all your life. And so I think that there are a lot of things that have moved the world into hospice, but I think that the hospital, the system of medicine itself has also changed. So there's a lot that's evolving in this process, but hospice has become more available. More readily available. Also, there's the baby boomer generation getting older, so we have more of an older population.
75 million?
Yes.
That's what, almost a third of the population.
And the East Texas community, especially, we're a retirement community, and so a lot of people come this direction, you know, for at that age where they start to have more health issues. So,
is hospice a death sentence?
No,
That came out wrong, but I mean, do we only use hospice at end of life? Is that a more eloquent way to put that?
There are so many things that are false about hospice, but one of them is no, it's not at all a death sentence. The goal of hospice is to help you live and do the best you can, the longest you can, but at home and outside of the hospital and outside of the acute care setting. I mean, especially if you know that going to that hospital in that acute care setting, that there's nothing more they can do to make you better there, right? And so it's when you get to that advanced disease state and they say, well, if you go to the hospital, there's not much more we can do for this COPD. All we can do is give you some steroids. Well, guess what? Hospice can give you some steroids at home, right? To try to help improve your symptoms and those things. If they're going to be giving you adjusting your diuretics, hospice can help adjust your diuretics at home too, so that if you have heart failure and there's a lot of fluid, they can try to get some of that fluid off without you having to go into the hospital setting. And so the goal although the focus is comfort, and people also often feel like, well, then they're just going to take everything away except for pain medicine and they're just going to let you die. And that's not true. That's what you, I think, are referring to. So often it's you're just going to go home.
Well, just
and
the
die.
Perception, right?
Yes.
You're going to go home and pass,
and
which would be a good way to segue into palliative care.
Right.
Could we distinguish the difference between hospice care and palliative care?
Yes. So palliative care are patients with incurable conditions, but we're typically looking at a patient population.
Palliative care? Am I pronouncing it right?
Palliative.
Palliative.
Palliative care. And palliative care is patients with incurable conditions, but whose prognosis is expected to be longer than 6 months often, or it could even be that they're hospice appropriate, but they aren't ready to accept hospice. They may never be ready to accept hospice, but they also need increased symptom management and support. So palliative patients are typically those that we typically look at where we say they may have a prognosis of 2 years or less. When you are diagnosed with an incurable condition, you may live with many of those diseases for decades. There's a lot that we can't heal in the world of medicine, but we can treat and we can manage for decades. But what happens, though, along that disease process and along those decades is that you move through all your treatment options. So you start with COPD, you start with congestive heart failure, you have all these treatment options, you're on low dose meds, they adjust the doses, it gets stronger, they rotate medications. The problem is after you've had it for 20 years or 15 years, you start to run out of how many more medicines or options they can continue to change and adjust. And so many more times, instead of treating the disease, we're treating the symptoms, which is what palliative care is. I always say in palliative care, I don't treat congestive heart failure. I don't treat hypertension necessarily. I treat, though, shortness of breath. I treat fatigue. I treat anorexia. I treat those symptoms because symptoms are what cause people to decline. When they're not sleeping well, when they're not eating well, when they can't breathe, so they can't move around, so they end up bedbound in total care, people decline faster. So if you can manage their symptoms to keep them functional, to keep them moving, to keep them eating, to keep them feeling better, then typically we believe people do better longer. And so the goal of palliative care is we're helping to treat symptoms of those patients with incurable conditions, but they're not yet at a place where they're appropriate for hospice, or like I said, they may be at a place where they are appropriate, but they don't want hospice for whatever reason, or they're not accepting of that, and that's okay too. The goal is to palliative care is not to convince you to do hospice eventually. Palliative care, the goal is to help you do whatever you want. You need to be aware of your options, educate you on your options, and then their goal is to say, if you want to be at a hospital at the end of life and on a machine and you intend to die in an ICU on a ventilator, well, then we will try to make that transition and that road as comfortable as it can be. But we also want to educate and make sure you understand, what does that even mean? Right.
Loneliness.
Right.
Is what I think, you know, it's probably hard. The value of a hospice to me is a time when the people that love you can tell you goodbye.
Right.
I mean, that's what I think the big difference is, without beeps and, you know, nurses coming in every second. That's the value that I personally see in hospice. Kind of a morbid question, but I can't think of anybody better to ask. What are we dying of now?
Well, same old things we've always been dying of. You know, honestly, we still die from pneumonia. I think people, you know, are often surprised by that, right? But we do, because eventually your body just gets so weak that people still die with pneumonia. People still die with urinary tract infections. People still die.
But is this at the end of life when we just don't have any strength left in our body?
Absolutely. You know, they still die from heart failure. They still die from cancer. There's a lot of things that we can't cure. So we will still die from these diseases. Many people do live longer than they used to with these conditions and these diseases. But yet again, living longer may mean a heavier symptom burden. So to have the best possible quality of life through that, trying to manage symptoms, and that can happen on palliative care or hospice.
Why don't you educate the audience a little bit on quality of life and the importance of it at the end?
Right. So it's not my job to define quality of life for you or people that are out there listening to us, because everybody has their own definition. For some people, they would say, I want to live as long as I can, so long as I am in my home. But if I have to go to a nursing home and that's the level of care, I would rather die at home, even if it meant less time, than go to a nursing facility. Other people would say, no.
You see a lot of that?
Yes, we see a lot of that. Other people would say, I'd be fine living in a nursing facility. I just don't want to be where I can no longer interact with my family. I can no longer do my own self-care. But if I was awake and able to talk to my family and just needed to be in a total care environment, I'd be fine living in a facility that way. But that's what's most important, is defining your own quality of life and making sure your family knows what you would accept and what you wouldn't accept, so that the decisions that healthcare professionals and your family and you are having to make as your condition worsens or you continue along to the, toward the end of life, that people know what your wishes are, right? Because we work in the hospital with palliative care. We sit down with families all the time and go through options and decisions they may have to make. And the question is always, we can continue on this ventilator or we can continue on this BiPAP. Would they want to live, though, if it's going to be with a feeding tube on a BiPAP? Or on a machine? And there are many people that absolutely know they wouldn't. And there are many people that say, I don't know, we've never talked about it. And never talking about it makes that burden on your family way heavier than if you had said, no, dad told me or mom told me she would never want to do this. But having those conversations is hard, right? Especially when you're not dying or you don't even know sometimes that you have an incurable condition.
Do men and women handle death differently?
Yes, I do. I think men and women, I mean, in my experience, handle illness differently. And what I mean by that is very often men, some of their main priorities are dignity, independence, right? If they end up total care and bed bound, many of them I see often lose the will to continue to fight because they start to feel they have no control and they're losing their what dignity and pride, right, that they had. I also feel, though, that men handle advanced disease differently in that it's a lot harder for if an elderly couple, if I see the wife get sick, it's really hard for the husband to step up and start taking over all the roles, right? Cooking, cleaning, bathing their wife, caring
especially
for their wife.
Especially an older generation where
absolutely,
you just haven't done that.
Yeah. And so I feel like it's really hard for them, although they're so proud they often won't ask for help and they're going to get it done, you know, but it is so much harder than a woman when her husband gets sick. The hardest part for them in caregiving is the size of the man, right? Trying to care for someone, roll them, take care of them because they're so much often bigger than they are in care support needs. But they're by nature, women have always been the caregiver, right? Often. And so you see more of that. So I do feel there's that handle and therefore often decisions that they would make in regards to how much they're willing to go through and what they'd put up with and what they can tolerate or where they want to be. Those decisions are often different based on man and woman, but it's also different based on age, right? Based on experience. Many times the decisions I feel are more so based, most times when I talk with families about what their wishes are, many of them are based upon, well, I watched my mom go through this. I watched my dad go through this. I know I don't want to do that, right? So I think our experiences are very different. But the odd thing is so often nowadays we don't take care of our elderly and our dying at home. So many of the younger generations too often haven't seen someone die. They haven't been at home as a caregiver and seen those things. And so I think, too, they really struggle with these decisions and what they would want because they haven't had that experience firsthand. Whereas decades ago, most people cared for their loved ones in the home until they passed. And so growing up as kids, they may have had their grandparents.
I think we're a little more self-important home. Now, a little busier, yeah, it seems it like, is. And we don't have the same reverence, I guess, because, you know, I guess they're also called the silent generation because they're quiet.
I think, too, it's more expensive to live, right? I mean,
for sure.
Both people have to work. I mean, many times to keep a household going, no one's there to take care of that older person that needs to be bedbound in total care all day because both adults in the home have their jobs and they're trying to work to pay for their family to live.
Can we talk about what dementia looks like towards the very end and what hospice makes a difference on that?
Sure.
Is that all right? No, that's a touchy subject. I mean, all got dementia, it seems.
Dementia is how I ended up in this field. It's what my grandmother had. And when I mentioned being a caregiver, that's kind of one of the ones that's closest to my heart. I spoke with the Alzheimer's Alliance last week, actually, in regards to dementia. So most people that die from dementia actually die from infection. They often die from pneumonia or urinary tract infection. Because people often say, well, what do they die from? Well, those things are what they die from. So typically, either they start to have troubles because of the weakness. They end up bedbound. They either have trouble swallowing, so they aspirate, unfortunately, so pneumonias, or urinary tract infections, that bedbound incontinent state where they end up getting infections, urinary tract infections. So so hospice in those patients, also, though, I would say to you, dementia is one of the longer end-stage diseases.
So goodbye.
It is a long goodbye. And so it is often, you know, when you have a cancer, often people start to decline, and the decline can sometimes be faster, actually, and surprising. It's often the story is they were doing okay, and then all of a sudden, right, things started to get worse. The same thing I often find with heart failure, COPD or CHFers, all these people, it's like, well, all of a sudden they were hospitalized with this last exacerbation. It got worse this one time, and then they were gone. And so it seems more of a sudden end, but dementia doesn't do that. Dementia does this long, slow end. And so I do feel like in hospice, we often get these patients because caregivers have been caregivers for so long, right? So often too, when you have someone that's ill, early on, you have a lot of people that recognize, oh, they're not at church anymore, right? They're not here. They need help. They stop by, they check on you, they bring meals. But when you've been doing that for 10 years in the home, the amount of help and the amount of support and the amount of people checking on you becomes less and less. And so you often do, hospice does end up with a lot of these patients because their caregivers need help. They need support, and they're exhausted. Often their children will say to me, I'm more worried about dad than I am mom at this point, right? That they're going to kill themselves trying to keep the other one going, right?
I've got one more uncomfortable question before I lighten it up quite a bit, but hospice is not that light of a subject. It's a very serious subject. With what society is facing in dementia and our lack of progress treating it, it just seems very, very slow to come out. I'm hoping AI will affect that in a positive way. Ken, is it out of line to ask you the physician's assisted suicide? Mm-hmm. Personally, I've had a little experience with dementia, Parkinson's, as we all have. I'm not the only one. We all have. Personally, for me, I don't think I would like to spend the last 15 or 20 years of my life, which is pretty normal with the disease, to last that long, not yourself, getting quiet,
losing control,
the world getting darker, all this stuff. Do you think we'll reach a point where if we don't make some headway on this disease soon, that we'll start to see a little bit of a trend with this?
So, excellent question. So controversial. But here's what I would say to that is that when it comes down to making your wishes known, this is a huge factor with something like dementia, because we don't necessarily have to even move to that. If you have written down in your wishes to say, hey, once I'm no longer verbal and I'm no longer able to independently live at home and take care of myself, whatever your...
There's a lot of depression before that, though.
There is. There's a lot of depression before that. But most people with dementia end up getting infection, like I just said. Mm-hmm. And often they end up getting pneumonia or UTIs. It can be earlier on in the disease process.
Oh, really?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Earlier on, they can't. Right. You get sick. You can say, hey, family, once I'm at this stage, if I get sick, I don't want antibiotics. Those antibiotics aren't going to cure my dementia. They will only bring me back to a state where I have to live longer in this condition of slow decline. And so instead, I want you to call hospice. I want you to keep me comfortable. I want you to let me fall asleep and peacefully go in my sleep. And so you don't have control when you die, I don't believe, right? But you do have control of how much you go through.
That's the reason I'm asking the question. Like if you've worked hard your entire life, you plan to enjoy your life, and you're one of the ones that gets diagnosed with one of these awful dementias, and there's many of them now. So I guess Lewy body is the worst. I wouldn't want to suffer from Lewy body dementia, to be honest with you. I would, but I also don't want to affect my family and scar my family by going too soon. But my question was, because once the dementia starts and we digress from there, if we don't have a point where we say this is the point enough, and could you say I don't even have to get to the point where I'm not verbal? It's just the fact when I don't know who you are, and you know.
I have had people in the past. I mean, I have within my career now of 16 years. I have had people that literally were still functional, independent, and verbal, but came into the hospital with dementia, underlying dementia, had a bad infection, and at that point they were so sick that they were kind of out of it. And at that point, their family said, they've already said to me. And even though I may could make them better, right? We could do antibiotics and we could get them better. And they may still be able to shuffle around the house with their walker. And they may still have a few words and be able to talk some to their family. But the loss that they had already suffered, they had already been clear with their family. They would not want to continue to do that. And I've had families here locally that have made that. Actually, they don't have to make that difficult decision, where the patient has already said to them, you need to honor my wishes.
Right.
At this point, any worse than this, I don't want to continue to do. So when there is a natural exit for me, let's take it, you know, and let me naturally go.
I'm here to be more than 98.7 degrees.
Right. That's right.
I get that. Let's lighten it up a little, huh?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. talk to me about the GIFT project.
Okay. So the GIFT project is a new community service project that the Hospice of East Texas is outlining here within the East Texas communities, Longview and Tyler. The GIFT, G-I-F-T, stands for Giving Instructions for Tomorrow. And these are some of the things we're exactly talking about here. It's an outreach project. It is about an hour and a half program where some of our group from bereavement and nursing services can come to any organization or any community event, and they can go through with starting these conversations and starting the questions that you need to ask yourself about what are your wishes at this point. I think it's always important to say your wishes can change over time. A lot of people, I've already made my living will and my advanced directives. I don't have an incurable disease, right? So my wishes now may be, and I'm also in my 40s, my wishes now may be very different than they are if I'm diagnosed with an incurable condition. They may be very different than they would be if I was 85, right? And so along this road, the wishes that I have.
It'll be different when you're
58. Absolutely, it may be, right? And so it's important to readdress these things. But what's really uncomfortable is talking about death and dying and what your wishes are when you're dying. And so the goal of the GIFT project is to make it comfortable to start having these conversations with your friends, with your family, in a safe environment. And it also provides an outline of advanced directives. It's not to push you to make decisions. It's not to push you to decide one thing or the other. It's to make sure your wishes are outlined well and that your family, as best we can, knows them. And that's a huge gift to your family. You know, in doing patients with end-of-life care, the guilt that people have to live with after the loss of a loved one when they've had to make decisions is heavy. But if they can say, you know what, my dad told me this is what he wanted, and they feel like it wasn't their decision. It was actually that patient's, that person's decision. And that makes it so much easier. So this is a gift. The GIFT project is a gift not only to the patient, but more so even, it's even a gift to their family, right? And so it's a community outreach project. And on the website for the Hospice of East Texas, there's a link that if you, your church, your community, your organization, if anybody's interested, we're glad to come there and start these conversations.
They need to be had, certainly. And I think as we advance further in medical, I fear that we're advancing the ability for our bodies to live indefinitely. But we're not just bodies.
Right.
And so that's what I just don't see the attention, the effort you mentioned early in our conversation about treating symptoms versus treating the problem. And I think, you know, that's where we are for now.
Yeah.
Last minute or so, everybody's talking about it. Do you ever see AI changing hospice?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and there's already talks about AI getting involved in prognostication, right? Because the truth is that many people that have advanced diseases, some people don't want to know at all how long they have. But many people, if they actually knew that they have heart disease and that you put all this information in a computer system and it says, I'm afraid that this person, by the way they've been declining and what their pulmonary function test or what their heart failure tests look like, that they could be in the last 2 to 3 years of life, many people would want to know that. They may change how much they're working. They may change how much time they're spending with family. There's a lot of ways that they're looking at AI to impact advanced care. I don't know that it's all right. Some of it scares me a little bit. I don't think that information needs to get in the wrong hands. None of us can know exactly. However, I do think that all of these things may help to impact the decisions that you make and how you live your life, right? And that may be valuable to the patients that want to know it, right?
Laura, thank you very much once again. Laura is with Hospice of East Texas. Their URL is hospiceofeasttexas.org. I've met them a couple of times now, and I can tell you there's no better place to go when you're in this time of need. Laura, I really appreciate you spending more time with me today and hope to have you back again soon.
Would love to. Thanks so much for having us.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.